You know, kids can go crazy about dinosaur fossils at the museum. Many of us grow out of that phase. Those dinosaurs might become reminders that we are turning into fossils, at least to our kids. But fossils are much more than just old bones. They can tell stories about where we came from and about our planet's history. Dr. Mike Gottfried is an associate professor in geological sciences at Michigan State University and curator of paleontology at the MSU Museum. Mike's here to share with us the stories that fossils can tell about evolution and climate change. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks. Very nice to be here. Thanks, Mark.
Before we look at some of the artifacts that you brought in, I know you've traveled widely as a paleontologist. Has there been a geographical focus to your travels and to your work?
I've done a lot of work in the Southern Hemisphere, and we know from geological evidence that the Southern Hemisphere continents were once joined together into a big supercontinent called Gondwana, and a lot of my research has focused on trying to uncover the story of how the split up, the breakup of that Gondwanan supercontinent has affected evolution.
So what countries are we talking about here?
Madagascar, South Africa, New Zealand, Antarctica, a little bit of South America, really pretty much all of them is the degree that I could.
Okay. Well, forgive the pun, but this is a groundbreaking segment here on Current State because this is the first skull that we've had in Studio S. Can you describe, you brought a couple of artifacts here with you today. Can you describe for our listeners the skull that you brought in?
Sure. I brought in, because I think it's an interesting piece of evidence that shows evolutionary connections, I brought in the skull of a small animal that belongs to a group called the mammal-like reptiles, cunningly named because they're reptiles that are very mammalian in some of their features. Hmm. And so what they show is the transition from reptiles to mammals. And it's in a sense, an evolutionary snapshot because this little skull has some features that if you found them isolated, you would think, you're dealing with a little mammal. But on the other hand, if you look at other parts of its anatomy, it's more reptilian. So the lower jaw is that of a reptile, but the teeth are starting to become kind of specialized. There are little incisors and molar in the front, molars in the back for grinding up food. So if you just looked at the teeth, it would look more mammalian. And it dates to about 240 million years ago, and it's from Southern Africa. And that's a great place to go to look at that story of the transition from reptiles to mammals.
So you don't necessarily need the entire skeleton to figure all that out.
Yeah, good things come in small packages sometimes if you work on fossils. You don't necessarily need complete skeletons are great, but you don't always get them. And this is actually a cast of a skull from one of the museums in South Africa.
This is a skull It could definitely pass for something reptilian, I think, that is probably 3 inches long and probably an inch thick from top to bottom and maybe an inch and a half wide.
You look at the teeth, it has little nipping chisel-like incisors in the front, and then it has a longer sort of stabbing-looking tooth in the middle and then grinding molar-like teeth in the back. And that's, again, something you would not find in a more typical reptile, which has more uniform-looking teeth. And one of the cool things on it is if you look really closely in the snout, there are little openings, and those are openings where the whiskers would have been situated. So think of a reptile with whiskers. We think of that as a mammal thing, something that your cats or dogs have and so on. So that's one of the features that puts it more toward the mammalian direction.
So we're essentially witnessing evolution with a piece
evolution
like
in
this.
Action, and that's the fossil record. You know, that I think is critical because it gives us this sort of deep time evidence for evolutionary transitions, and that's one of the more compelling ones. I think it is kind of comparable to Tiktaalik, this so-called fishopod, or the fossil that shows the transition from fishes to land animals. It's been featured a lot lately in the media.
Dr. Mike Gottfried is our guest. He's an associate professor in geological sciences at MSU, and we're talking about, he's brought in a couple of bone samples, artifacts here with us today. PBS finished up a short series last week called Your Inner Fish,
right,
about how human anatomy shows that we share this common ancestor with fish and with other animals as well. Can you give us a couple examples of how our anatomy shows that?
Well, we have gill openings when we're really, really tiny and when we're developing embryos, and those disappear. If you actually look at one of the more compelling ways
where are those?
Those would be on the the side of our throat, basically.
Oh my gosh.
It's exactly in the comparable position where you'd find them on a fish, and they disappear as we develop embryonically. And also the muscles that allow us to do things like smile are actually directly comparable to the muscles that operate the gills in fishes. We've just kind of co-opted them and adapted them for another purpose. So we actually carry with us some of the features that our fish ancestries, if you go back hundreds of millions of years, had. Often the purpose has been changed, the function of those structures has changed, but the essential features actually are very comparable.
Amazing. Creationists sometimes argue, often argue, that there isn't enough fossil evidence to support the science of evolution. What do you think?
Well, shockingly enough, from my perspective, I would argue with them on that point, but that'll come as a huge surprise. I think there's very compelling evidence
Ample.
From the fossil record, and I think Darwin himself, in his main work on this was published in 1859, was troubled at the time by the lack of what he thought of as transitional fossils in the record, fossils like Tiktaalik, which features in your inner fish, like the little skull that I brought in. But in the years since then, I think there's been a lot of fossil evidence uncovered that shows these evolutionary transitions. So you have things that are in effect composites of the group that they're descending, they share an ancestral relationship with, but they're also showing features of the group that they're evolving into.
I got it, exactly.
So, again, there's snapshots, basically, evolutionary snapshots.
You brought in a much smaller piece, smaller than the skull here. Tell us about this.
I brought in a little shark tooth. And one of the other things, and along with looking at evolutionary transitions and looking at the fossil evidence for evolution, another thing that's of great interest to paleontologists, and particularly with respect to current concerns over climate change, is seeing what the fossil record and what the deep time history of our planet tells us about how climate has changed over millions of years. So I brought in a little shark tooth that's from a type of shark called a sand tiger shark. And it was collected, and I was involved in this research up in the Canadian Arctic at about 75 degrees north latitude, not very far from the North Pole. And 50 million years ago, when this shark lived, that area was essentially subtropical. And this shark lived in the ancient Arctic Ocean, where no shark could survive today because it's much colder. So it's showing us in a really vivid way how the climate has changed over the course of those millions of years. You could still cut yourself on the tip of this thing. So
really?
Be careful, Mark.
Okay. I can see this is...
Yeah, I mean,
this is the oldest thing I have ever touched in my life.
I wouldn't want you to do yourself an injury on the.
It's not very big, but I'm sure it does look somewhat lethal.
And you could look at teeth of living sand tiger sharks, and they would look essentially identical to that.
If I could get in a time machine and go back to the Arctic at that time, then what do you think I'd see?
Oh, you'd see dense forests with palm trees and broadleaf trees. There'd be turtles, alligators, big hippo-like mammals. The oceans would have had a large number of sharks and fishes that are usually found in much warmer climates. So basically, it's peaking at about 50 million years ago, the Earth was a much warmer place uniformly over the entire globe. It actually, subtropical conditions extended almost to the polar regions.
Now, does that suggest that because of climate change, that tropical animals might again live in the Arctic someday?
Indeed. We try to project out into the future using what we know from the past as a key to try to interpret and understand that. And current trends, if you look at climate models from all the leading scientific academies, project continuing temperature increases that will affect the polar regions. And I think there's already evidence that plant and animal groups that are expanding their range northward in the northern hemisphere and southward in the southern hemisphere, there are some animals and plants that are great opportunists. So some species that are not well adapted to broader environmental changes will die out, but others are opportunists and they'll take advantage of the changes.
Mm-hmm. What is it like to search for fossils?
Well, for someone who does what I do, it's sort of the ultimate treasure hunt. So the excitement of finding things and being out in the field, we usually end up camping in pretty, sometimes rather isolated and extreme environments. So there's a lot of excitement just physically being in those kinds of places. And a lot of it is sometimes, in some cases, tedious because there's a lot of exploration, a lot of hiking, cover a lot of ground.
Is Africa still I've gotten the impression over the years Africa is a real center of paleontological activity. Is that the case?
Africa is at the center of a lot of interesting questions, and it was right in the middle of Gondwana, this ancient southern hemisphere supercontinent. So it's been kind of an evolutionary crossroads in that sense. The challenge in Africa is that a lot of it's still covered in dense vegetation, and there are also places that it's just that are isolated and difficult to travel to. The infrastructure there in many places doesn't always make it easy to do that kind of work. But I've spent about 10 years doing field work in Tanzania on a project and loved it. A wonderful place to work.
Our guest has been Dr. Mike Gottfried, Associate Professor in Geological Sciences at MSU. We've been talking about fossils, the paleontological, there I said it, record here on Current State. Thanks very much, Mike.
My pleasure. Thank you, Mark.